We're picking up part two, the education of W. Thurman. And you were talking about you outgrowing that, because now it's beyond that.
Yeah, we wanted to be involved in National Welfare Rights Organization with George Wiley. And at that point, John, the organizers in John didn't feel like that John was ready to the people in there. They weren't to the point where they were ready to step out and get involved with a whole lot of other group of people, nationalities. So they hadn't got them to where they wanted them to be yet. But we had to move forward because we had this, my aunt and I both, we were seeking more and we had learned more, and people was pulling us to, because we were active. We was just out front out there. So George Wiley and them had come to Chicago and said that at that time you could start your own little welfare organization, what they call it, welfare committee. Then is we got 10 people together, and we got over 10 people together, and we split from John and actually set up an organization called, let's see, Welfare Recipients Demand Action, and we initialed it WRDA. WRDA.
WRDA.
We formed our own organization. She was the president, I was the vice president, and a lot of the people, a lot of the welfare committee members from JOIN came along with us.
Mm-hmm.
So we still had
a whites too.
Yeah, well, that's all.
Yeah, that's all there were.
And then we began to integrate with more blacks and with some American Indians who work with us and all that, you know. And we formed our own organization. And then we, George set us up and sent us literature and stuff from National Welfare Rights. And then Dr. King had started coming in, you know. And by us being so out front, he asked us, Dove and myself, how would we feel organizing other locals in the Chicago area? And we went around setting up locals for him for National Welfare Rights,
mm-hmm.
and we became citywide organizers
mm-hmm.
for welfare rights, and that's how we got involved with Dr. King as well,
mm-hmm.
and going to some meetings and things that prepare for this march in Cicero.
Market Park.
Yeah, Market Park, and then we also, he was supposed
Cicero,
to
too.
March in Cicero, and he canceled out on that one, and Bob Lucas.
Oh, yeah. Led. I'm seeing Bob tomorrow, by the way.
Well, tell him, Dovey,
yeah,
said how he remembers
Isn't
me.
That funny?
Yeah, and so we want to be involved in that, and so we was like out on the fire line, the front line. Then the Black Panther Party had come into Chicago and got really active here as well with Fred Hampton now. And here I am, I'm still doing my black awareness too, see, on my own self. And by then I think I had converted to the Afro. And I was in my dashiki.
Oh, you had an Afro and dashiki?
I had an Afro and dashiki and my wide rim glasses. I was all the way there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But now you're dressed in, now in a
yeah,
white,
I'm a little different now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you had all the costume and everything.
Oh yeah, I had to get a black identification.
Uh-huh.
I was all right on sister then. I was, you know, super.
Yeah.
I was super black,
yeah.
Militant. I was looking for militancy because I was tired of people pushing me around. So I stood up, and I think people followed me, and I did not just stand for black, though. I stood for white, and it didn't matter who you were. You were poor, I fought for you, you know, and I just didn't take no stuff. And that's how we got involved in starting with Welfare War Day, and then that's how I got involved with Dr. King and with National Welfare Rights. Also end up working with SCLC.
Mm-hmm.
Because we went down to Birmingham,
mm-hmm.
Alabama, and set up a welfare rights organization there.
You did?
Yeah, I led the first welfare rights demonstration in Birmingham.
That's when Bull Connor was
there. That's right, and they had them dogs out there and the fire trucks. I had never been exposed to this.
Uh-huh.
This was new for me. I won't tell you, I was scared.
Why, man?
But I called myself bad. I said, well, I'll die fighting. Mm. I'm right on. You have to eat me. You just kill me, but you can't eat me, you know, like that. Mm. I had my words to say. And we went to the church where the bombing had taken place. With the little girls. That's where we would have our meetings.
Mm.
And we stayed there 6 weeks. That was funded through National Welfare Rights. Mm. George Wiley and them sent us down there because we had did such good organizing.
And then what happened?
Meantime, Joint was still struggling to move, but they were losing out because they weren't moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Even the young guys who had been involved had formed the Young Patriots.
Right, I remember.
Uh-huh, because they needed to identify with fighting of the police. Police was doing them so bad up here. And that, not just them, but all the young guys.
Yeah.
And so they had a struggle against that. And plus, John was just losing momentum.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, and then the organizers began to leave, so we all kind of broke off into our own little organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we worked together on issues, housing, and we had the welfare handled, and somebody else had the police brutality, but we would come together and meet, and so that's how the organizing was going.
You were still black and white.
Still black and white. Our organization was totally integrated,
yeah.
Even when it came down to working with the Black Panther Party. Dove and I worked with them, but they came over to support. They wanted to put me out of this apartment at 840 Sunnyside because they said I had too many undesirable people coming in my house, all these hippies.
Mm-hmm.
But see, I was involved with organizing, and these was young white kids, and you know, they were like, what do you call these kids when they, oh, I can't think of the word.
Yeah, they were.
No, they were.
Spaced out.
They weren't spaced out. They were really organized.
Yeah.
They were given to us through this organization to help work with us and to help continue our organization.
They were what we call long haired.
Yeah. And we would be having meetings, and then I had some of the black brothers and the black sisters coming up from some of the other organizations, and they said I was having the wrong type of company, and this man. His southern white guy, he was so racist. Me and my family was all right, but he wanted none of these other folks up in there. And I told him, to me, everybody was the same, and I used to cuss him out all the time.
Mm.
And he said, how can you talk to me like that? And I give you, I'm the cause you getting your welfare check. I said, you ain't giving me I didn't say nothing.
Yeah.
I was about cursing in. And I think he tried to get me put out the building. They wrote me a letter from at that time they had that 221D3 plan, and they give you an apartment under leasing. And I took it to me and Bob Lucas and a group of more met, and we sat around the table and talked. It was infringing on my rights because I wasn't disturbing nobody. I wasn't doing anything like that, just meeting in my house, and we weren't doing anything wrong. And we came, we had the Black Panther Party over here. We had, at that time, what is it? Now it's called something else. This black organization, Peace Stone Nation.
We had
the Peace Stone Nation.
Mm-hmm.
We had these guys, because they was getting involved in organizing.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the disciples.
Mm-hmm.
We had the ones from over here, the Young Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a mixed demonstration.
Mm-hmm.
And all these folks aren't supposed to get along, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they were all walking together, fighting, saying that they couldn't put us out of the apartment. And they raised so much cane, just marching around the building. We walked around the whole block. The news media came out until they sent an apology letter.
Mm-hmm.
And they told him if he said one more word to me or any of my guests, that he would be fired. And I could bring
charges. Was working for the city, this guy?
No, he was working, he was the manager of this high-rise building.
His employer.
Uh-huh.
The company said
well, he was
fired.
Working for, we went to CA, went to Section 8.
No, yeah.
And they had infringed on my rights.
But I'm thinking, so there's a period then of seeming triumph, militancy, of black and white together. And then And then what happened?
But then when Dr. King
was
assassinated.
That changed things.
That changed things, because at that point, I had gone to the South Side to a meeting. Me and my aunt and one of the white ladies with us. We were going just like we usually do. And when it happened, we didn't know what had happened until we ran inside this church. They got us in the church. And they had beat up this white priest, and they were saying Dr. King was dead, and the black folks was just really upset, and a white guy had shot him. And we had to get our people back over here. But when we came back to the north side, I was living on Clifton then. We came here, and the car, they had got stickers just that quick saying, "Hail, hail, the king is dead."
Oh, there were people singing that, huh?
No, they had them on the back of car, on the car.
Oh, bumper stickers.
Uh-huh, and they had this Confederate flag flying out the window. These are the people in this area here. The ones who were racist, you know, Klan or KKK or whoever. And I got so angry. How could they want to kill him? And he's talking about, because I used to say I wouldn't be nonviolent.
Yeah.
I don't see how he could be nonviolent.
Well, at that time, you were saying you couldn't be nonviolent.
Right. I'm ready to bust some heads, give me a gun, give me something. And
here he is
nonviolent. He was always praying and kneeling, and they beat him up, and he went to jail, and now they killed him, and he was just about bringing people together. And then this was a white guy who did it. That's when I went into my super militant black bag. I'm sick of white people. You try to help them, and look what they did to Dr. King. I was so angry. Oh, boy, I just broke loose from all my white friends. I didn't want to talk to them. I didn't want to see them. And all I wanted to do was just to get the one who killed Dr. King. And I couldn't understand why all this happened, if he's on doing the right thing. And it took me about 3 or 4 months before I could get myself reorganized, because I just wanted to stay. And finally, one of my white friends got through to me, called me on the phone, said, "Don't hang up." Said, "That hurt me that they killed Dr. King, too. I didn't like it. I didn't pull the trigger. I wish I could get them, too." And then they started talking about, "Do you realize how many white people died in those demonstrations, who put themselves out on the line?" "Yeah, but you know they've been doing this, and they've been hanging folks, and you see that they don't like it. You all just all stick together. I just didn't want to hear." And she kept talking. Like I say, I can't hold anything. Somebody comes to me really in a humble way and said, "Look," and she was crying. And I said, "Well, maybe, maybe you're right, you know." Then I had to begin all over again the search to find out what is the problem, what's going on now. And it was really, I was really kind of confused. And you're getting tears in your eyes. I was really kind of confused on why would they do a man that like this, and then yet it's white people. I would see on the news how the people was hurt and stuff, and so I had to do some soul searching on my own. And I hated not talking to my friends, because we had been close and went to jail. We've been through a lot together, and we never looked at black and white before. And I had to cool out. I took a little break, and then I started back working with Fred Hampton again, and getting heavily involved in our welfare rights organization, because I had stopped basically going up to the office. I was just that angry. And then I started coming back down and began to study up some more on politically, how the system will trick you. And if you make an dent, they'll get rid of you. Long as you hollering black power and all power to the people and white power, that's fine, because you're not coming together. You really can't do anything to them. You're doing it to yourself. But what Dr. King was doing is knocking a dent, because he was pointing the finger not at race, but at who's doing it, who's really in control.
So hollering white power or black power, all power, Well, okay, they'll let that, because you guys are not going to get anywhere.
Right.
Because you're separated.
Right.
So you saw that. Now, that phone conversation, because that was a friend.
Yeah.
Talking, highly personal.
Yeah.
And that played a role in your coming back.
I cared about her, and I didn't like not being friends. I had never looked at her like before.
You know, you're hitting something key. Something hurt. Knowing somebody.
Yeah.
Remember you talked of the myths earlier?
Right.
Myths about people you do not know.
Right, right.
And now this woman would call someone you knew.
Right.
Because you experienced things together.
Right.
And which that affected you.
Right.
Plus the fact that, wait a minute, maybe she's saying something.
Right. I heard something in there.
Yeah.
It was my time to hear. And it was my time to move forward. And to move out of it. Because I needed that, to go through that so I could see just how black folk who haven't had this opportunity like me, I understand how they have the hate from what they've been through or what their parents been through. And somebody needs to get the word over that it's somebody else going through the same thing that ain't even black. It's a system. It's somebody doing it to all of us. And you just don't see them. So by me having that personal contact, I knew that this person had been, we had been very good friends. Her children, my children played together. We ate together. You know, we partied together. We had fun. We went to jail. We demonstrated. We did everything. So there was no reason why she didn't pull the trigger.